I'm sorry, everybody. We had a technical difficulty, so we're gonna start again. So sorry again for this. I can see everyone's almost reconnected again. So I'm gonna give everyone just 1 minute to reconnect again. I'm sorry it cut out. Everyone, so sorry again. We had an issue. I'm bringing Arjun back on. I don't know what happened. Give us just 1 second. Okay, so I see almost everyone's back online. So since everyone's almost back online, I'm just gonna ask Arjun to take it back from the top, and we'll just get started again here. He's back on with us, so give me just 1 minute.
Welcome to the Small Law Firm Coronavirus Growth Symposium. It's been really, really exciting for me to see all of your emails and see all the success you are. It's pretty amazing that even with just this free symposium we've been doing for just this week, we're already starting to see that you all are beginning to start to experience some positive results. You're already putting things in action and getting results and building your businesses. And, you know, it's like one of my mentors, I started working with this person back in 2010, the end of 2010, and I was completely and totally flat broke. And now, 10 years later, my business last year did $15 million. This year we should be on track to do $19 million, maybe $18, $19 million. And let's just say personally, my financial situation is very different from the way it used to be. I mean, very, very, it's a different world, different universe. And he told me that his goal was to help create 1 million millionaires. And we talked about it, and he said, obviously I don't expect to be able to work personally one-on-one in this lifetime. There's not enough time to work with enough people to create 1 million millionaires. But if I can help you, and then you can help create a thousand other millionaires, and that's kind of the idea. And so what's really exciting for me is to see that we've got 400 small law firms. And almost all of them are making more money now and saving jobs and even hiring and creating jobs. And they do it all by saving their clients and helping their clients avoid going down the tubes. And in a very real way, and I know this sounds a little hokey, but I really feel very proud of all of us that we're helping to save our economy. And we're going to be the ones who help to rebuild our economy after the media and the politicians and the people who are trying to scare us all to death are done with us, it's going to be entrepreneurs like us, not just lawyers, but entrepreneurs like us who kept our head, who grew our businesses, who help other people grow their businesses and put their lives back together. We're the ones who are going to be rebuilding the economy and creating what comes next. You know, it's important to understand that what's happening right now, it's really only happened twice before in modern history. Maybe modern history is an exaggeration, but it's only happened twice before in the last 100 years. And you'll forgive me if I'm overlooking a significant historical event. I apologize, but the dropping of the atomic bomb signaled the end of an era and the beginning of a different era. We entered the atomic age. Everyone, when that bomb got dropped, understood that that there was a before and there's an after. Before the bomb was dropped, after the bomb was dropped, two different worlds. And the strategies that people used in the pre-atomic era went out the window in terms of relevance and usefulness and utility the instant that bomb was dropped. We saw the same thing happen with 9/11. September 11th, 2001, before September 11th, 2001, after September 11th, 2001, the world was a before and after. It happened in an instant, at least in terms of the United States. What is going on right now with our economy? And I've been on the phone since 8 o'clock this morning with some of the most successful, fastest growing, highly influential entrepreneurs, not just lawyers, but all different entrepreneurs. I've been on the phone nonstop since 8 o'clock this morning, and we are all just in amazement as to how few people seem to really understand that we will all look back at this 10 years from now and recognize that there was a before and an after. The difference between the atomic bomb and 9/11, of course, well, there's a lot of differences, but one of the big differences is both of those happened in an instant and everyone saw them. It was visible and you could see the visible, tangible evidence of it, and it happened instantly. This is just kind of happening in slow motion. This is like it started in slow motion on March 1st, and it's kind of been building and building and building and building and building. And I think that the month of March 2020, maybe it'll drift into April, will be like that moment, that seismic moment that changes the before and the after of our economy. And I can cite just a few simple examples, and I've been talking with lawyers all day long with some of the most amazing law firms, and every practice area recognizes how this is going to affect their practice area. I'll just give a few examples to illustrate a point. Commercial real estate. Everyone has been forced to take their law firm virtual. Everyone has been forced to take their business virtual. I meant to say business. Well, you know, people are going to get back and their leases is going to expire, and they're going to be thinking about, do I sign a new 5-year lease on my commercial office space when I now have tangible proof that my team can operate and profit and serve our customers and serve our clients, and we can function as a virtual organization? And why would I keep paying $20,000 a month in commercial office lease, or $30,000 a month in commercial office lease, or $50,000 a month in commercial office lease or more, when I now know I don't have to, and there's going to be a lot of vacant commercial office spaces. People realize they don't need it anymore. Immigration lawyers, we've been talking, you know, business immigration lawyers. now there's all these businesses that used to hire business immigration lawyers to help people immigrate into this country from other countries so they could work on the team in the office. And now they're going to realize, wait a second, we all operated virtually for a month or 2 months. Maybe we don't need to pay the commercial, the business immigration law firm to help us bring talent into this country. Maybe we can hire talent outside of this country. Maybe we can even have a wider selection of talent to hire outside of this country if we tell them that they can work virtually, since now we know they can. And we know that we can operate that way as a team. Estate planning attorneys, you're going to find that you've got clients who you thought they were retired. They thought they were retired. And the pandemic has now forced them to embrace and learn and use technology. Stephanie, there's someone with noise. It's forced them to embrace technology. And I am telling you, you're going to find that there's estate planning clients who you thought they were retired. And 6 months from now, a year from now, they're going to be starting online businesses. They're going to be re-engaging and re-entering the workforce because now they know they can operate technology and get comfortable with technology in ways they never understood they could do before. Family law, transactional attorneys, banker, every practice area has to recognize that this is a seismic shift in the way that consumers are going to operate and the way your clients and your staff are going to operate, and your staff is going to have different expectations now than they did before. All right. So here's the point, because we're here to talk about marketing. Number one, you've got to change the way you've been doing things in a wide variety and range of different ways. You've got to change the way you've been doing things. But this meeting is about marketing. So we're going to focus just on marketing. Right now, in every practice area, and one of the things I've been seeing in the questions over the last several days we've been doing this symposium, is you're trying to get your clients to have the conversation you want them to have. And I understand that. It's understandable that you want them to have the conversation that you're prepared to have. This is the conversation you're more comfortable having. This is the conversation that is in your comfort zone. This is the conversation that where you are the expert and you have expertise and you are above them in a hierarchy and they're below you in a hierarchy. But, you know, they don't want to have that conversation right now. That's not the conversation people want to have. You have to enter the conversation that's going on in the client's mind. Stop asking yourself how to get them to care about what you want them to care about, and start asking yourself, why don't you care more about what they care about? And at the risk of repeating myself, which I've been repeating myself Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and now again, here's what they care about. I promise you, this is what they care about. They're all tuned in to the same radio station about themselves. You know, WIIFM, what's in it for me? They care about their time. They're worried about how much time they have left on the planet to make up for everything that's gone wrong and that they've lost due to this pandemic. They're worried about their time. They're worried about how they're going to have to start using their time on account of the changes taking place and the changes that have already taken place because of this pandemic. They're worried about their time. They're worried about different ways to make better use of their time. They're worried about how this is affecting how they get to use their time, how they have to use their time. They're worried about their time. Number two. They're worried about their money. They're worried about what's going to happen to the money they already have. They're worried about what to do with the money they already have. It was in the stock market. Should I put it into something else? It was in cash. Is it time to put it in the stock market? it used to be in commercial real estate. Maybe I should take it out of commercial real estate. Right now it's in the stock market, or right now it's in cash. Maybe I should start buying some investment properties. It was in some investments. They're all going to shit. Maybe now's the time to finally just, you know, pay for that kitchen renovation. They're worried about the money they've got. They're worried about how they're going to get, how they're going to continue to earn money. They're worried about their income. They're worried about all the opportunities that they're recognizing are all around them to improve their income and to maximize their income. They're worried about their money. They're worried about their reputation. Number three, they're worried about what people think of them. They're worried about what their friends think of them. They're worried about what their family thinks of them. They're worried about what their colleagues think of them. They're worried about what their coworkers think of them. They're worried about what their boss thinks of them. They're worried about what their vendors think of them. They're worried about what their customers think of them. They're worried about what their clients think of them. They're worried about how they appear to other people. And the more enlightened of them are also thinking about how they appear to the person in the mirror. How do I look to myself? That's the conversation that's going on in their head right now. And trying to figure out how to get them to stop having that conversation right now and start having a conversation that will be more convenient for us. Well, it would be really nice if they'd stop worrying about their time and their money and their reputation, and they would just think about their legal case. They're not going to. Now, if you're a family law firm, just for example, you can talk to them about hiring your firm, or you can distinguish yourself from everyone else and put yourself in a position so that when they do hire a law firm, yours is going to be the only choice that they hire. You'll be their only choice. Not that they couldn't, but they won't want to choose anyone but you if you enter the conversation going on in their head right now and use this opportunity to cultivate a deeper, stronger, more trusting relationship with them. This is true of your current clients. This is true of your former clients. This is true of your referral sources. This is also true, and this is why this is such a beautiful, amazing time, because it's also true of all the prospective new clients who you don't even know, and they don't even know you, but they're looking for answers, and they're sitting at home right now looking for answers and looking for solutions, and they're not looking for answers and solutions to their divorce case, and they're not looking for answers and solutions to just their bankruptcy case, and they're not just looking for answers and solutions to their intellectual property case or matter. They're looking for answers, more global answers, and you have an opportunity to step up and be a leader. The way you do this is by building a direct response marketing campaign. A direct response marketing campaign is where you offer something of value and deliver real value. And in order to get the thing that is of real value, it could be a written report, it could be an audio recording, it could be a webinar, it could be a podcast, it could be a live Q&A session, it could be anything that helps a person make sense of the conversation that they've got going on in their mind in terms of their time and or their money and or their reputation. The reason why this is such a fantastic time to be launching a marketing campaign, particularly a direct response marketing campaign, is because you already know what they're thinking about. They're all thinking about how this pandemic is affecting them. And then you can just bring your unique spin to it. So, Stephanie, I want to play the lesson.
Here?
I can hear you here from
my computer. So they hear me talk and they're seeing this screen over here, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
It's the next one. It's the next one.
That one?
No, keep rolling.
Keep rolling.
This one.
That one?
Yeah.
Okay. So we are, so I'm just going to play this video. It's not an hour and 27 minutes. It's actually only, it's only about an hour. And then there's Q&A, but we're not going to play the Q&A. So I'll come back and end the Q&A. And this is our July 2019 live quarterly meeting. And this is our July 2019 live quarterly meeting. And there's about 350 or 400 law firms in the audience. And for those of you who are wondering what Stephanie looks like, you're about to see her on stage because she taught this lesson, not me. Are we waiting for that thing to load?
Yeah, a little closer in here, but I'm gonna shut your mic off.
Hi everyone. It's pretty tough to follow the 90-day look back because you guys are all so amazing and so inspiring, but I will do my best. Where's the clicker? Oh. So Arjun talked to you guys this morning and I'm about direct response marketing and I'm following up and expanding that and really diving into how this is done. For those of you that don't know me, I am Stephanie. I manage all of how to manage a small law firm's marketing and sales. So if you just joined us, that means that it's working. I'm behind the scenes, obsessing and tracking absolutely everything. I'm semi-stalking you guys, seeing what you're clicking on, where you're going to, on our site, not anything beyond that. But I'm seeing how many sales calls it took you to convert. I'm seeing how many times you clicked and went to the bootcamp page, if you guys joined the bootcamp last quarter, how many touch points it took you to buy. Because that's what you do when you're obsessing about this stuff, getting it down to a science, and really tracking conversion. It's truly just a science. So, and that's the thing that most people don't get. Most people don't get this. Most people think marketing is the pretty ads. Most people think it's how good the colors look together. Are the commas in the right place? That's what everybody thinks. I mean, Arjun spoke about that this morning. And, you know, I started working here when I was 18. So I grew up in this world of direct response marketing. This is the only thing I've ever known. This is the only marketing that makes sense to me. This is the only kind of thing that sounds normal to me. Yeah, where is the call to action? Like, where is it? That's the only thing that makes sense to me. Where's the call to action? Where do they go? Where do they buy? How do they buy? How do they get to your list? What happens after they get on your list? How do you convert them? How do they go from prospect to paying client? That is the only thing that makes sense to me. So in this picture, we were at my college graduation where I graduated with a finance degree and not a marketing degree. Because, well, halfway into college, it stopped making sense to me. Marketing stopped making sense to me. So I switched my major, graduated, because what they think about marketing in school is the award-winning campaigns and all of that, and that's not what it is. That's not what it is at all, and I know that those of you guys that are growing 50%, 100% year over year, you guys get it. You guys know that that's not what marketing's about. You guys know it's about conversion, and you know that you need an offer. You need to get people on your list, you need to nurture them, and you need to have them hear your story and hear what you're all about so that then you can convert them. So conversion is what really matters. And that's why if you get it, you're gonna win. I want to introduce a new school of thought because I think as marketers, we're all going fishing. We're all fishing for new clients, right? So we're going down the river with our fishing pole, and we're gonna go try to catch a fish. The problem is that a lot of us are fishing at the end of the river, where the river meets the ocean. And in the ocean are sharks. And sharks are also trying to eat fish too. So they're eating the fish before you get there, and they're eating the bigger fish, the tastier fish. You're getting to them before you do, and you have to now compete with sharks. And guess what? Sharks are underwater with the fish, you're not. So the smarter thing to do is go slightly up the river and try to fish before they get to where the sharks are, right? Make sense?
Yeah?
Well, that's wrong too.
completely freaking wrong. You're just a little bit better than everyone that actually sucks if you're doing that. Because the best thing to do is build your own pond with your own fish. So you can go fishing whenever you want. And you can eat as much fish as your heart desires. And you can have your own fish in your own pond, and you feed them and you fatten them up, and you can go fishing if you'd like. You can send someone else to go fishing for you, because that's what you all want, right? So you can send someone like me, because Arjun doesn't go fishing anymore, hardly. I go fishing, and I enjoy the hell out of it. So what you want to do is be able to get your fish from the top of the river, the beginning of the river, and divert them into your own private pond. Get a piece of bait, and you get them to come into your own private pond. And in your own private pond, they might get there when they're very small, when they haven't eaten too much, but you're gonna feed them, you're gonna nurture them, you're gonna tell them about your story, they're gonna like hearing about your story. If they don't like it, they'll opt out and go back to the river and swim down to the sharks. But the ones that do like what you're feeding them, they're gonna stay in that pond. And you're gonna go fishing and you're gonna catch the bigger fish. Notice there's bigger fish in that one than in this one. He's catching some fish, but he ain't catching them all because they're still getting away and they're still going down to the end of the river. So out of these three, which one would you rather be? You wanna be the guy at the end of the river? You wanna be the one at the beginning of the river diverting all his fish into the pond, right? I wanna be that guy. That's where you get steady, predictable clients. They come into your pond, small, not very fat. They come in and they don't even have a high sense of urgency. They probably don't, they're small, right? They're waiting to get fattened up and then you can go fishing. So if you wait and you nurture them the right way, you're gonna have a higher percentage of conversion on those fish in your pond. And you'll really start to realize more ROI on the leads you're getting, on the leads you're spending money on to get. You get higher ROI with them in the long term. This doesn't happen overnight, but this is how it goes. So how does this actually look in action? On your workbook, on page 14 and 15, there's a spread with a marketing funnel. It looks like this. So it might look complicated, but it's not that complicated. And in the next 80 minutes, which is what I have left, I'll break this down for you guys. And I'm hoping that you'll walk out of here with the pieces thought through so that you can either go back to your office and take this to your marketing person or do it yourself and build your own funnel like this. So you start creating your own pond. Now this is getting them in the door and setting up a process to convert them, okay? So on the left-hand side, what we have are ads. There's print ads, there's digital ads, there's Facebook, there's LinkedIn, there's banner ads, radio ads, TV ads, all of it. You can name any kind of ad that your heart desires, but they all do the same thing. Every ad makes a promise, and it starts to create urgency. You put the ad out there in the world to get someone's attention. Some of them will have an urgent need and their hair will be on fire and they're gonna respond to your ad right away. And they're gonna be the first one you called because you were the first one that got to them. You were fishing first, they never got to the shark, so they're calling you, right? But if they're at a level one and they have no urgency, if that ad made a strong enough promise to them, they'll still take your bait, right? The ad is what gets their attention. And then you go to the second part of this whole funnel, which is what happens after they clicked on the ad or they saw the ad, took action on the ad. If we're talking about a digital ad, now they're going to a landing page. What is a landing page? A landing page is where you clicked on the ad and now you see another web page with an offer and hopefully there's a way to sign up for something, collect data. So half of that landing page job, half of the job of the landing page is to deliver and fulfill on the promise that you made in the ad. That's one half of the landing page job. The other half of the job of the landing page is to present a compelling offer. Present the bait, and the bait better be compelling for what that ad offered, right? The ad made a promise, the bait better answer that promise, or better fulfill or expand on it or something, it better resonate. And on that landing page, there better be a system to capture data, capture the leads. So now they have an option. They saw this landing page, there was a promise, it delivered on the promise, there is a way to enter information, and they either take your offer, take your bait, it's compelling enough, or they don't. If they don't take it, you can retarget them, Hopefully you have tracking devices to retarget them. We can talk more about that another time. But if they did take your offer, now we're going to move them into a follow-up sequence. This is where you get your ROI. This is where, if you don't have a follow-up sequence, you're leaving money on the table because you spent money to get a lead. You spent money to, on that ad. Maybe it was $242,000, like that State Farm ad. Hopefully not. But you spent money on that ad, right? And now they're coming onto your list. They're opting in for something. So you better have a way to follow up with them, especially if they're not at a level 10 urgency. That's the biggest thing. If they're at a level 1, you got to keep following up with them. It's going to take, on that follow-up sequence, there's a confirmation email, there's a phone call, and then there's 2 more email sequences. It's going to take several steps, right? Confirmation email. They opted in. They requested that piece of bait. So you're sending an email, and you're saying, delivered, here's what you wanted, right? Then in that email, they might get exposed to another offer. In our case, the second offer is, by the way, schedule an appointment. They took the bait, so now we're sending them the email, and we're saying, hey, if you like this thing, schedule an appointment with our team. They don't take the offer, so they're going to go to the next email sequence. We're going to include that same call to action again. And then they still don't take action, so we'll do it again. And then ultimately, yes, they've been touched 3-4 times. They're not going to take the offer, so we put them in a long-term campaign, and we continue to nurture them. Just like you would in the pond with the fish, you're going to keep nurturing them and keep feeding them. So now, when they do opt in, also, there's another component besides the follow-up sequence. They're also going to see a thank you page. On that thank you page, that's when you tell them what's going to happen next. Hey, look out for an email from arjon@howtomanageasmalllawfirm.com, and it'll be in your inbox in 2 or 3 minutes with the subject line, here's your free resource, and expect to hear from us, right? So that's what we have on our thank you page, but you want to give more value on this page. If they took the scoop of vanilla ice cream, maybe they also want chocolate syrup. So offer them the chocolate syrup. This is a perfect place to do it. They're looking at the page. So they're either going to take the second offer or they won't, which is fine. You see, if they don't take it, they stay in the first funnel and the first follow-up sequence, and you're going to try to realize the ROI at that point. If they do take the second offer, even better, and what you now know is that that prospect is twice as likely to be your customer. They've taken action 2 times. So you want to keep nurturing them. You want to put them into a different sequence, and this is a conversion sequence that's going to be slightly more persuasive. It's going to tell them exactly what to expect after they've taken action the second time, and it's going to tell them even more about you and your story and what you do. And hopefully it's going to get them all the way to the bottom where they make a decision, yes or no. So they're either going to say yes and they're going to buy and they're going to become a new client. So we've now taken them from prospect to paying client. Or they're going to say no, and then you put them in your long-term nurture sequence, assuming that they're not an asshole, they are actually your target client, all of that, right? So this is what it all looks like. Add to landing page. Opt in or not, they do follow-up sequence, thank you page, second offer, are they taking it or not? If they do, second follow-up sequence. The follow-up's the only way that you'll see the most of your ROI, because you can't assume that someone sees the ad 1 time and they opt in for something 1 time and they're gonna become a client. You can't assume that. For most businesses, it takes 7 touch points before someone's ready to buy. And by the way, the higher the ticket item, the more touch points it might take. So for us, an 18-month contract, you got to come in person and see this thing because none of us are selling a $100 item, right? So you have to engineer all of these touch points into your follow-up funnel. So how do you know if the company or the marketing person that you're working with actually is doing a good job of all of these things, actually has the follow-up in place, actually is doing this at a level that's going to get you the most ROI, that's going to actually make sense for what you're spending on the ad and what you're getting for it in terms of new customers? So at the first level, it's just stupid. There's no call to action, right? This is the people that Arjun like yells about when he was on stage before. So there's no call to action. There's no follow-up. There's no tracking. There's no anything. There's no way to follow up with the prospect. There's no way to even get them from, hi, I raise my hand to, I'm meeting with you and I'm going to be a potential new client. There's no way to even get them there. So that's just flat out stupid. Number two is an amateur. They might have a call to action, but they're sending all these leads to your general website. You don't even know which one of the ads is working. You don't even know which one of the calls to action is working. You don't know if the ad on Facebook is doing better than the ad on LinkedIn. You don't know any of that because you're not tracking. And by the way, it's leading somewhere, but there's no follow-up. So this is just amateur hour, 100%. Number three is the junior way to do this, which you're getting, you have a call to action, you have a basic follow-up, so at least when they sign up for something, they are receiving a confirmation email. But that's kind of it. You're not doing much to nurture them, and you're not doing much to convert them. At the advanced level, number four, they have a call to action, they're focusing on building a list, and they're actually testing a couple different things, collecting data, measuring some things, and holding some sort of accountability, right? But you could do more. You could test more. You can make changes. The more data you have, the more you know what's working and what's not working. So if you don't actually have data, you'll never know. But at the fifth level, which is what we can call master, you have a call to action. You're building a list. You are testing different offers. You're collecting data. You're taking measurements and actions based on that data. You're offering different things to your prospects because you're also segmenting. At this level, you have taken all the people that want apples and you put them over here, and you've taken all the people that want bananas and you've put them over here, and you've taken all the people that want oranges and you've put them over here, and you're only offering them the things that make sense for each one of them, right? If someone wants apples, I'm not going to offer them apple pie. I mean, I will offer them apple pie, but I'm not offering that to the person that wants bananas. So that's really sophisticated marketing. Andrew's not in the room, but that's what Andrew Cass does, who John mentioned earlier. Very sophisticated marketing. And I said master because really, you never master this. You're always testing. And the goal and the dream of marketers is to get to a cost of acquisition of zero. If Andrew was in the room, he'd give me an amen probably. Nick, you're in the room. Amen? Dan would say amen. So you want to get to a cost of acquisition of zero because you have your prospects realize a return on investment for you every step of the way. They're taking action on offer one and then a slightly bigger investment on offer two and then a slightly bigger investment on offer three, and they're going all the way through and you're getting a cost of acquisition of zero. That's when you've mastered it. You've mastered this when they say so at your eulogy. I don't know who said that or where, but it makes sense. So I want to show you guys what this looks like in our business at least, and give you some examples so you can think about it and how you implement this for your law firms. At How to Manage, we'll put out an ad for a free resource like the Business Plan Workbook. That might have been how some of you came in the door. You saw an ad, you requested it, and then you got on our list, right? So this ad is on LinkedIn. It's actually doing pretty well. There's a promise in the headline, write your profitable business plan in just a few hours. Free workbook. So it's not intrusive to you because it's free. Just a few hours seems easy enough. I've had a law firm for how many years and I don't have a business plan. Let's get this done in a few hours, right? So it's promising, it's compelling, and it's written to resonate with small law firm owners. The creative in the ad says become a happy lawyer. Great. So now this ad, which is converting at about 35%, which is just a benchmark for our business, and it's good for our business. You will have to figure out what that benchmark is for your business. It might not be the same. And now this ad will take you to a landing page. Here's what the landing page looks like. It's not even necessarily the prettiest landing page, it really isn't. But it's delivering on the first half of the promise. You know you're on the right page, right? There's a picture of the business plan workbook, so you know, oh yeah, I'm here. It says the business plan workbook, more copy that tells you you're in the right place. And the second half, now download it, download the free workbook, that there's a compelling offer, there's a way to capture the leads, and there's something you can do with it. So then we go into a follow-up sequence if you opt in. You go into this part of the funnel. You're gonna get a confirmation email that says, here's your workbook, blah, blah, blah. By the way, schedule an appointment. The next day, my intern might call you. Hopefully, if it's a Wednesday or Thursday, a day of the week, they'll call you. If it's a Saturday, we'll try to call you Monday. But we'll try to call you within 24 hours. My intern, who makes, I don't know how much an hour, not, you know, what an intern makes, he calls them, and then he'll try to get them onto Eric's schedule. Eric, who's our salesperson, he calls them and says, hi, you requested our business plan workbook. How was it for you? Did it help you? Is there anything else I can help with your law firm? Would you like to speak to someone? So then they say yes, they say no. And by the way, if he gets them on Eric's calendar, then I buy the intern lunch. And then if he gets them on Eric's calendar and Eric is able to make the sale, then the intern gets $50. So it's great. I mean, why not? Before, if I didn't have this in place, these leads would all just be sitting there. What if, you know, they did actually have a sense of urgency and we weren't doing anything about it to get it from a 3 to a 4, or 4 to a 5. So this is how you do that, right? You move them on the scale from 1 to 10 through the follow-up sequence. And if they don't get, if they don't take action and schedule an appointment, then the rest of this way, all 4 or 5 or 7 of these emails will every step of the way try to get them to schedule an appointment. They also saw the thank you page when they requested the workbook. So that thank you page looks like this and is also trying to get them to schedule an appointment. There's a scheduler. Oh, there it is. There's, you know, you can schedule, then you keep going, and there's some testimonials in there. Oh, look, we're booked. There's Holly, there's Sarah. Yeah, great. So there it was, right? So if they did take action and they did schedule the appointment, then what's going to happen is after they receive their workbook, they go into a different email sequence. They go into sequence number 2, which is slightly more persuasive. And it's more about what happens next. Here's what to expect on your call with our team. Be ready to share your personal, professional, financial goals. Some of you might cry. No, we don't actually say that, but sometimes they do. So, you know, we prepare you for that. We prepare you to share some of that information. We try to prep the person for what's coming next. You're always prepping the prospect for what comes next. You're not trying to get from the ad to this part, right? You're trying to get from the ad to the landing page, from the landing page to the opt-in, from the opt-in to schedule an appointment. And every step of the funnel is doing one more thing. The biggest mistake is going from the ad and trying to say, hire me, I'm the best lawyer ever. That's the biggest mistake you could ever make because they're not ready. Unless their hair's on fire and they're at level 10, they're not ready. The person that's at level 1 and sees the ad that just says hire me is not even gonna get on your list. They're not even going into your pond. So when they do actually need help, it'll be too late, they'll be with the sharks. That makes sense? Yeah? Okay. So what do you actually need to build your own pond, to do this for yourself, to have this sort of funnel working for you in your business? There's actually only 10 things we really got to think about, and we're going to think about them now. The first thing is thinking about your offer, thinking about the end goal. What do you ultimately want this person to do, this prospect to do? What do you ultimately want them to do? You want them to retain your services, right? You want them to buy a estate plan from you. You want them to take action. What's that action you want them to take? Some of you have this in your magic statement, right? So take a minute, write it down. The goal here is that you can take this back to your marketing person or take this back on Monday and implement it in your business.
Lorena, did the video come to an end?
It's over.
Okay, let me, I think Arjun thought there was 30 more seconds. He's getting on right now. Okay. Give him 1 second to get on mute. Don't hear you yet. Hang on. You need to unmute yourself, Arjun. Lorena, can you unmute Arjun, please? There you are.
All right, I'm here. Hi. All right, we're here. So, what's happening? I have a standing desk. That's what's happening. All right. questions. Start off with questions. Star 6 or star 9, or press the little thing under participants to.
Star 9, not star 6.
Sorry?
Star 9, not star 6.
Star 6, star 9?
Yeah, star 9 if you're on your phone and have questions.
All right, star 9 if you're on your phone, or press the little discussion thing. And I will help you with your questions. I'm resizing my screen. Star 9, or press the little thing to raise your hand. And if there are no questions, I am waiting to eat some soup. My soup is calling me.
I see a question in the chat, but this person hasn't raised their hand. Can I unmute you so that?
Yeah, that's a question that requires more. So let me just say something about this question. And I'm not trying to give the person who's asking it any question. What advertising do you recommend to reach business clients? I would encourage you to be highly skeptical of anyone who doesn't know enough to not answer a question like that. Because I need to know what kind of business clients are you trying to go after. I need to know more about your market. I need to know what are you offering to these business clients. Are these small businesses, big businesses? Is there an industry we're focusing on? By the way, that is a crash course lesson on how to not get screwed over when you hire a PPC person or anyone to hand your marketing and advertising over to. So we're clear how to manage a small law firm. We are the CEO of your business. We don't do your pay-per-click for you. I'm not trying to get that business from you. I just, you know, we see so many pay-per-click people and so many marketing people who reveal their lack of experience by the fact that they don't ask enough questions. It's kind of like a lawyer, kind of like a client saying, should I have an LLC or a C Corp with an S designation? And it's like, well, what kind of business are you going to be in? What do you plan to do with it? Who are the shareholders going to be? Are they all US citizens? I mean, there's a lot of questions you got to answer before I can give you a real reliable answer to that question. And I would invite you to raise your hand and I'd be happy to talk it through with you. Stephanie or Roland or someone, take Amber off the next person with their hand up, get them ready. And I'm just gonna shut the door to my office because someone left it open. I'll be right back. So get ready. Hello?
Lorena, please unmute Amber.
Can I unmute Amber? There, I just unmuted Amber.
Yeah, you can. You have controls. I just lost my controls.
Hi again, Arjun. My colleague and I have actually been, we've both participated in these meetings all week long. And one of the things that we keep hearing you talk about that we would like to hear about is the calendar of profit. I think is what we called it. It's your calendar that plans out your profit over the next year or 2 years, and that we were curious about how that works.
Okay. I Have you seen the calendar that I've been standing in front of for many of these meetings?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so we're sitting in my office. I'm in my office right now. And just to kind of give you, that's what we're talking about.
Yes.
All right. And if I went into Stephanie's office, she has a calendar very similar to that. My calendar is projects that I personally am going to be involved in or that depend on me. Stephanie's calendar is all the marketing initiatives and projects and programs and things like that that we're launching. You conceptually understand this, yes?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So let's start off with a few basic concepts. And I know that this is going to sound a little bit didactic, and I don't mean for it to be insulting to anyone, but it's good to have this front of mind. One, we live in a universe where causes lead to effects, correct?
Yes.
Effects don't just show up magically on their own without there being a cause that made them happen. When you see a law firm that's profitable, when you see a law firm with steady, consistent, predictable, reliable cash flow, when you see a law firm working with staff with that can get the job done even when the owner is away for days or weeks or months at a time, that is an effect which in this universe has causes that produce that effect, right?
Right.
Okay. Profit is an effect, not a cause. Yes?
Right.
Okay. Profit is an effect of two main things. One is, or three main things. One is bringing work in, which is marketing and sales, efficiently, productively getting the work done, mm-hmm. and collections and financial controls. If you get those three things aligned, you get profit. If one of those things is out of alignment with the other, it's like having a kink in a hose, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you want profit to be an effect. How much profit do you want to have as your effect?
I'll just throw a number out.
Don't just throw a number out. Tell me a real number, because as long as we're going to make a plan, let's make a plan that's real.
500,000.
That doesn't sound very convincing. Is that a real number or just a number you pulled out of the air?
I am not 100% sure what our projections are right now for this year.
That's not my question. My question is, how much profit do you want?
500,000, at least.
I can't plan at least. But I'm not saying this to give you a hard time, Amber. Your name is Amber, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm discovering that a lot of people, their name on their Zoom is not really their name. I apologize. And I'm not trying to give you a hard time. One of the hardest parts of building a multi-million dollar business, I promise you, one of the hardest parts of building a million dollar law firm is finding the courage to make a real goal, like a goal that's meaningful to you. So if you say $500,000, you say you and a partner, right?
Yes, my colleague, yes.
50-50?
Actually, I'm her employee.
You're her employee.
Yes, but I handle the accounting and intakes and leads and such.
Okay, so how much net income does she need to take out of the firm? Total owner benefit, her W-2 salary, her K-1 profit distributions, and all the other stuff you're going to run through the business. What does that lifestyle cost? Not the lifestyle she has now. You don't need my help to create the lifestyle she has now. The lifestyle she wants. And let's just say 24 months from now, how much does it cost to live the way she wants to be living? Do you have a sense of what that number is?
Yes, I do.
What is that number?
200,000.
200,000. So the firm doesn't need $500,000 of profit. The firm needs $200,000 of profit.
Correct.
You see, but this is the point that I'm making for you, and really I'm trying to make this point for everyone who's on the call. I almost screwed you over big time. Had I not clarified that, I would have started getting busy. Let's make a plan to generate $500,000 of profit for your firm. And because you don't need $500,000 of profit for your firm, you're not going to be willing to do the things you've got to do to make it happen. And so, you know, you're just going to make it, you know, as soon as things get uncomfortable, you'll stop. But on the other hand, if $200,000 is real, like a hard number, like I need this number, like it means something to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you take all your excuses and shove them up your ass. And when the going gets tough, you get up and you get going. You don't just make an excuse and sit down and say, well, you know, I didn't really need $500,000. I really only needed $200,000. So I won't do this marketing. And I didn't really need $500,000. I only needed $200,000. So I won't do this sales thing. And I only needed I didn't need $500,000. I really only needed $200,000. So I won't do this with staff or whatnot, right? And what they do is they excuse themselves from everything because they don't really need the number that came out of their ass. But when we deal with a real number that really means something, that's tied to a real lifestyle that you want to live, then every excuse you make has consequences, and those consequences are real. Make sense?
Yes, it does. Sitting here, we're talking, you know, it's easier to talk about this if we can talk about it in actual numbers that actually are affected by my company.
Right. And by the way, I just taught you all an extremely valuable lesson about meeting with prospective new clients and helping them establish goals that they're trying to achieve by hiring your firm. Because a big problem that law firms have is they allow their clients to engage the firm based on bullshit goals. And when the client hires the firm based on bullshit goals, that's when you have collection problems. That's when you have problems with the client, you know, quote unquote, running out of money in the middle of the case. That's when you have problems with the client, giving you documents and coming back to give you more information. Because the whole basis of the representation was based on bullshit goals that aren't real. You get what I'm saying?
Yes.
There's a question that I see in the chat that I just want to address. We're talking to Don K. We're talking about total owner benefits. Total owner benefits means your W-2 salary, meaning the salary, the W-2 salary that your business pays you for doing the job that you do for the firm. The same exact salary it would pay anyone else for doing the exact same job that you do for the firm. Plus your K-1 profit distributions. That's all the profit you make from the firm over and above all of the expenses. Plus all of the other benefits you run through the firm, like your travel, your home office, all the stuff, the fact that the business pays for your car, the entire owner compensation package is what I'm talking about when I say total owner benefits. So my total owner benefits with me and my wife together out of How to Manage a Small Law Firm is sitting right around $2 million. That includes our W-2 salary, that includes the K-1 profit distributions, and we try to keep our salary relatively low so we don't have to pay employment taxes on that. But we don't wanna make it so low that we create a distorted view of how profitable the business actually is. Because, you know, if I say, well, you know, I'll just pay myself $75,000 W-2 salary to minimize my employment taxes, then it really distorts, because no one who can do what I can do would ever do it for only $75,000. And then, of course, the business pays for my car, pays for her car, pays for a lot of other things, let's just say. And that total package is what I'm referring to. I'm not referring to just gross revenue. So Amber, back to my point, $200,000 is the number, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a sense as to what kind of profit margin the firm operates on? So for the owner of the firm to take out $200,000 of total owner benefits, does the firm need to generate $600,000, 33%? Does it need to generate $800,000, 25%? Does it need to generate $1 million, 20%? Do you have a sense of where that number is?
Okay. She's 700,000.
Roughly 700,000?
Yes.
So 200 divided by 700 is 28% total owner benefit. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. $700,000. Great. What is the average case worth to the firm? The average case, the average transaction, the average new engagement? Roughly.
Roughly 20,000.
700,000 divided by 20,000. 700,000 divided by 20,000. So we need 35 cases a year. Yes?
Yes.
All right. So 35 cases a year. How long does the average case typically take, beginning to close?
I mean, that one's a little bit harder to, she says about 2 years.
2 years. Okay. So at any given time, the firm's going to have roughly 70 cases open.
Correct.
All right. So the firm's going to open, roughly 3 cases a month. The firm's going to close roughly 3 a month, and the firm's going to have an inventory of roughly 70 open cases at any given time. Is that about right?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So we want, so the effect that we want to show up is we want to have the revenue effect of $60,000 a month show up as an effect. Yes?
Yes.
All right. To produce that effect, there's two causes, there's two main causes that we can focus on. And they're not either or, we have to focus on both. One cause we need to focus on is creating, managing, measuring, tracking, staying on top of processes and procedures and systems for production. Because if the work doesn't get produced, we don't get to keep the money. Right?
Right.
All right. So what is the team ratio for 30 active cases at a time? Is it one lawyer keeping 70 plates in the air at all times? Is it 7 lawyers, each of them keeping 10 cases up in the air at all times? What is your staffing strategy?
It's two.
Two attorneys?
Yes.
Okay. And what staff?
Two legal assistants, support staff.
Yeah. And what else?
And an intake coordinator and a part-time admin.
Okay. And do they all work from the office?
Not right now. But yeah. Yes, typically.
Do they normally all work for the office?
Yes.
All right, approximately how many square feet is the office?
Oh, let's see, 2,700.
2,700?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, and is 2,700 square feet about maxed out?
Yes.
Okay. So what marketing is currently happening that consistently, predictably, reliable brings in 3 new cases every month? Oh, one more question. What is typically the conversion rate of prospective new clients to paying clients? So in other words, you bring in about 3 new cases a month. How many prospective new clients do we need to meet with in order to have 3 new cases per month opened? Is it a 100% conversion rate and we need only 3? Is it a 50% conversion rate and we need 6? You follow?
Yes, I do. Let me take a look at my, let me pull up my report real quick.
Good for you. I like you. You have reports. You know who else has reports?
Who?
Almost every one of the 400 law firms that we run. Our members actually know what the hell's going on in their business. Isn't it better to go through life having reports and knowing what the hell's going on in your business?
Yes. Okay, so it looks like we've got about an 80% conversion rate.
An 80% conversion rate. Okay.
Yes.
So 3 divided by 0.80. So basically we need to bring 4 prospective new clients per month to get 3 new clients per month.
Okay.
Three out of 4 say yes. 1 out of 4 says no. That
right. Or right? They don't have a case or something along those lines.
If they're coming in and they don't have a case, then we need to fix something in your marketing to pre-educate them and precondition and pre-qualify them so they don't waste their own time and they don't waste your time. But let's just go with a 3 out of 4 conversion rate for right now, okay?
Okay.
All right. So we bring 4 prospective new clients in per month. 3 out of 4 say yes and hire the firm. The average case takes around 2 years start to finish. Some are faster, some are slower. The average case is worth roughly $20,000 to the firm. That means the firm is opening roughly 3 cases a month and closing roughly 3 cases a month, has 70 open cases at any given month, roundabout. Gross revenues of around $60,000 a month with a 28% total owner benefit profit margin to give us $200,000. And the whole thing is supported by 2 attorneys, 2 assistants, 1 intake coordinator, 1 part-time administrative assistant who fill up 2,700 square feet. Have I got about the big picture of it?
Yes.
Great. How much net income do you want to program into the firm 12 months from now? 400,000, 600,000, 214,000 and 52 cents? I mean, you tell me.
We're talking gross or net?
No, all we care about is total owner benefits, right?
Right.
I mean, if I gave you a $100 million law firm and the owner of the firm still only took out $200,000, she probably wouldn't be very happy, would she?
Right.
So all so I care about is
so
net.
So what? $600,000 for the full firm, and then that would give the $200,000 to that keep us at 30%.
Wait a second. You already told me that you're taking $200,000 a year out of a $700,000 firm.
Yes.
So I'm asking, what is the goal? Is the goal to just keep doing what we're doing, or is the goal to grow the firm?
Grow the firm.
Okay. Well, I can tell you all about how to do it. But I can't, I can take you wherever you want to go, but you need to decide where you want to go.
So if we, in 12 months, increase by 100,000, so it'd be 300,000.
Is that
for owner benefits?
So Amber, here's the thing you need to understand about working with me and my team. I don't care what number you give me.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't make a difference to me. You tell me you want to make 200,000 a year. You tell me you want to make 300,000 a year. You tell me you want to make 500,000 a year. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. To me, once you give me the number, the rest is just math, business planning, and execution.
Right.
It's fairly mechanical once you tell me what you want to do. The only thing I need from you when you tell me what you want to do is you need to be prepared to tell me why it matters enough such that you're going to be willing to go out of your comfort zone to make it happen. Because we're going to have to do things differently than the way you've been doing them. Because if we keep doing things the same way, we're going to keep getting the same results.
Correct.
So you tell me what the number is. Let's say 300,000. Let's say 400,000, just for purposes of this exercise, okay?
Okay.
So if the firm is going to give the owner $400,000, how much does the firm have to gross?
1.2 million.
1.4 million.
Yep.
You told me is currently doing 700,000.
Right. Sorry, I apologize.
Sorry. 1.4 million. If the average case value is going to remain $20,000, how many cases does the firm have to open every month? Six.
Okay, sorry. I was trying to do the math and my calculator was not at arm's reach.
Right. But it's six because 700,000 requires three cases. If we double it, if we double the net from 200 to 400 and everything else stays equal, then we have to double the gross from 700 to 1.4.
Okay.
If we double the gross from 700 to 1.4 and the average case value remains the same, then we have to double the number of new clients from 3 to 6.
Correct.
If we double the new clients from 3 to 6 and our conversion rate still is three out of four, then we have to double the marketing to bring in 8 prospective new clients per month. Yes?
Yes.
Now, if we're going to double the number of prospective new clients coming in every month, the question then becomes, who has the bandwidth and the capacity to meet with twice as many prospective new clients? Is the person who's currently meeting with 4 prospective new clients, does that person have the bandwidth and the capacity to now start meeting with 8 prospective new clients without losing their effectiveness? Or is that person already stretched too thin, and if we go from 4 to 8, they're going to fall apart?
No, it's perfectly within plausibility for that person to continue to meeting extra clients.
Great. Now here's the part where people start losing their shit, making excuses, and then telling me that they can't do it, which is all a bunch of bullshit because they can do it. The problem is they don't want to do it. They don't want it bad enough to do what's got to get done. So here we go to this part, right?
Okay.
How much do you currently spend on marketing?
Hold on, let me text her and find out.
Just give me a guess.
About 15,000.
Per
year or month? Hold on, she's texting me. Give me just a second. I apologize.
It's got to be per month. I mean, per year. That's a lot to spend per month to only have a $700,000 firm.
Biannually. That's what we're spending biannually.
So you're spending $30,000 a year?
Yes.
Okay. So unless we strike upon some magic pill or some magic wand or fall for some fucking crook who lies through his teeth and takes your money and says, I've got some magic formula to magically double the effectiveness of your marketing. I'm on the phone. Presumably, all things being equal, if we want to double the number of clients from 3 to 6 and we got to double the prospective new clients from 4 to 8, what do we got to be ready to do with our marketing spend?
Double it as well.
Okay, so step one, plan on spending twice as much money on marketing. How long does it take to spend the money on the marketing before the results start to show up? Let's just say, for argument's sake, 3 months.
Okay.
Well, do you want the 4 extra prospects to show up 3 months from now? Start spending the extra money on marketing today. If you want the extra 4 prospects to show up 6 months from now, start the extra $30,000 spend 3 months from now. If you want to wait to start seeing the results a year and a half from now, then you got a year and a quarter to wait till you start spending the money. Right?
Right.
I mean, isn't this fairly mechanical?
Yes.
And yet hundreds of thousands of lawyers all over the country say, this is impossible. How could it be? Because this is just how it is. It's just a business. It's not magic. All right?
Well, the concept, you have to spend money to make money.
You don't save your way to growth. You spend your way to growth. Okay. Now, if 2 attorneys and 2 assistants and 1 intake coordinator or 1 part-time administrative person can handle $700,000 in cases, what do you know we're going to need if we suddenly are going to have $1.4 million in cases?
Well, logically speaking, at least 1 more support staff, 1 more attorney, and the admin person needs to go full-time.
Is one of your attorneys not fully utilized right now?
No, contract only.
So if you have two attorneys who are working at close to full capacity.
Yes.
And they're handling $700,000 worth of business.
Yes.
And I want you to listen to what you just said, Amber.
Uh-huh.
Because you just fell directly into the same trap that most lawyers fall into, which is why their law firms don't grow. You literally just fell into the trap. And I'm not saying this to give you shit. I just want you to recognize it.
Okay.
And I'm giving you credit because you're going to recognize you fell into the trap, and then you're going to come right back out.
Okay.
We agreed that we wanted to double the profit from 200 to 400. We agreed that to double the profit from 200 to 400, we had to double the gross revenue from 700 to 1.4. We agreed that to double the revenue from 700 to 1.4, we had to double the number of clients from 3 to 6, which means that we're going to double the number of open active cases from 70 to 140. Right?
Correct.
We agreed that all things being equal, we probably have to double the advertising spend. And there probably are lots of ways to get that more efficient.
We'd have to completely double staff.
Let's just keep things simple, okay? And if we're gonna double the number of open active cases from 70 to 140, and two attorneys who are close to being fully utilized can only handle 70 open active cases at a time. And I said, so how many attorneys do we need to add? And you said, one extra attorney.
Yep, I see what you mean. We'd have to double the entire staff load.
Now you need four attorneys, you need four administrative assistants, you need two intake coordinators, and the part-time admin needs to come on a full-time admin, and your 2,700 square foot office, what does it need?
More square foot.
Unless you're gonna suddenly have people sitting on each other's laps.
Well,
I mean, that's not gonna help productivity.
Right, so we would need to double our square foot, our office space.
Causes lead to effects. So what we do is we double law firms. Our members double their firms all the time. I mean, it's very, very common. Someone comes in to work with us and the revenues are $100,000. A year later, they're $200,000. They come in, they're at $250,000. A year later, 18 months later, they're at $500,000. They come in, they're $500,000. A year and a half later, boom, they're at $1 million. That happens. I mean, that's like another day at the office around how to manage a small law firm. The problem is that this isn't complicated to understand. The problem is, how do you do this if you've never done it before? And it's scary. And now you need to have more policies and more procedures and more systems and better infrastructure and more documented systems and processes for how all these people are going to operate. And that's where things go off the rails, which is why having a professional legal administrator who's actually done this over and over and over and over and over again, this is why our 400 members are mostly way more profitable than probably most of you, and why their law firms are probably growing much faster than most of your law firms are growing, and why they probably have a lot less stress than most of you probably have. Because they have us on their team to help them manage all this. It's not because they're better lawyers than you. It's not because they work harder than you. It's not because they're, you know, better people than you. They just, if you're driving a car with four flat tires, it's gonna run badly. When you fully inflate the tires and tune up the engine, it's gonna run better, right?
Correct.
Most lawyers are running their law firms like a car with four flat tires, and they haven't tuned up the engine ever, and they've never changed the oil, and, you know, it just runs like shit. And they get so used to it running that way that it becomes normal for them. And then when someone like me comes along and say, hey, you know, we can make your law firm grow a lot. It's like if you never change the oil in your car, if your tires were all flat, if you never tuned up the engine in your car, if the spark plugs were all like 10 years old and the car was just like running like crap, and a mechanic came along and said, hey, you know, if I tune up the engine, change your spark plugs, pump up your tires, and fix how this thing's working, your car will run better. It'll run more efficiently, you'll go farther, you'll go faster, you'll be more comfortable. I mean, this is not rocket science, what we do at How to Manage a Small Law Firm. So Amber, when are we doubling the office space? Put it on the calendar. Tell me when you're going to get new office space.
Okay.
Are we hiring the two extra attorneys? By when will those attorneys be fully trained and fully vetted and fully on board? Because remember, once you hire them, you're going to give them a month of training.
Right. So right. 10 months.
So once you hire them, the first thing you do is you give them a month of training. So the day you want them to be up to speed and productive, you got to back your way down to a month before that is when it has to be their first day of work, right?
Okay, right.
How long does it take to hire someone?
To find the right fit, it can take a month.
I would say more than two. So the day we want to have this person productive and profitable, we got to back out a month for training. We got to back out 2 months for recruiting. Yeah?
Yeah.
So when do you want this person to be productive? You want this person to be productive and generating a profit for you on October 1st, September 1st, August 1st, July 1st, November 1st, April of next year. I mean, you tell me when you want to put that on the calendar. And now
it would be February. It'd be February 1st of next year.
So February 1st of next year is when you want to have both attorneys up to speed and firing on both cylinders.
Yes.
Yes. No.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. So if you're going to have them up to speed and firing on both cylinders, February 1st, 2021, that means that we better hire them. We better start hiring them no later than when?
Oh, they gotta 4 months.
They got to report their first day of work has to be when?
February 1st. So we would need
No. I said, when do you want them firing on all cylinders and being productive? You said
January 1st.
So if we want them firing on all cylinders and being productive on February 1st, and it takes a month to train them, their first day of work got to be January 1st, 2021.
Right. So we would need to start the hiring process no later than October.
No later than October. And we better start in September, because we're hitting all the holidays there, right?
Right.
So September 1st, we better start hiring these people. I mean, we better start recruiting these people. All right. Well, if we're going to start recruiting them in September, and before we recruit them, we want to make sure that we've got well-documented job descriptions, measurements, key performance indicators, and job descriptions. How long is it going to take to put all that together?
Well, I've been working on putting those together, but I think it's going to take at least a month, maybe two, to put all that together.
All right. So you better start that no later than July 1st. So July 1st, you got to be going really, really hot and heavy on getting the job descriptions, the policies, the procedures, the checklists, the templates, the systems, and you've got to build the recruiting machine, and you got to build the training plan. So that means you better start that no later than July 1st.
But of course, there's also a really, you know, big holiday there. So why not start it now since we're on lockdown?
Why not start it now because we're on lockdown? All right. Now you also have to have business for these people, which means you got to start dialing up the marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you currently have a marketing plan, or is it just
we do my the luck? Yes, we do. The owner has been working with a website design company so that we can get our website up and running in a much better, much more appealing
Okay, but we don't know if that's actually going to bring you any more business, because you've somehow managed to bring in $700,000 of business without any of that stuff. So rather than going out of what you already know with the new magic bean solution, let's talk mm-hmm. about what actually has been working. What is currently bringing
in Google?
Sorry?
Facebook and Google. And word of mouth.
How much is coming in from Facebook? How much is coming in from Google? How much is coming in from word of mouth?
So we've had client referrals are at about 20% of our total client leads. The Facebook leads are about 35% and the Google leads are 45%.
All right. So this might be a very easy solution. We may be able to simply double our spend on Facebook and Google and solve this problem. We might not need a new fancy website. I'm not saying don't get a better website. I've never looked at your website. It might be great. It might be terrible. I don't know. But however good or bad as it is, it doesn't seem to have stopped you from bringing in $700,000 worth of business, right?
Right.
So my point is, when are we going to start amping up our spend on Facebook and Google to see if that just magically solves the problem for us? Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
Well,
we've been really ramping up our Facebook presence during the COVID for our state. We, constantly updating, posting things from our governor, reminding people that we're there for them. Phone calls, checking, yes, even though we're working from home, we're sending emails, checking our messages periodically. We're really working to ramp up our presence with our clients, our current clients and prospective clients, through our Facebook page right now.
Okay, so I'm just gonna challenge one. I just wanna say that, yes, you should definitely amp up your Facebook and your Google and all that spend now, because now is a great time to do it. I've been preaching that all along. But just because it works now doesn't necessarily mean that it's gonna work after the pandemic is over. You follow what
Correct.
I'm saying?
Yes.
So just because you double your ad spend on Facebook or Google and it doubles your clients now, which may or may not work, I don't trust those results in a post-pandemic world.
Okay.
You understand why, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so my point is that I don't know that September is really a realistic time frame here, just because we got to kind of wait for the pandemic to end to see what works for marketing.
Correct. And how things are going to be different for marketing after the pandemic is over.
Got it. I mean, that's the multi-million-dollar question everyone's waiting to find out. I mean, there will be things that work. The things that used to work will probably, some of the things that used to work will stop working. Some of the things that used to not work will start working, and everything's going to change. So it's a little
right.
bit, you gotta be able to tolerate a little bit of ambiguity there. So Doug writes, 2 years as an accountant and 26 years of sole practice as an attorney, and never occurred to me to break it down like this to achieve the desired results. That's embarrassing. Doug, don't be embarrassed.
Hello?
Don't be embarrassed. Whatever practice area you're in, I probably wouldn't know my ass from a hole in the ground in that practice area. Doug, this is all I do. This is it. This is all I do. This is all for since 1999, since August 24th, since August 24th, 1999, this is all I've done. I know everything there is in the world to know about that much. I know everything in the world there is to know about that much. Just because you don't know everything about this, it's nothing to be embarrassed about. It just means this isn't where you've lived your life for the last 20 years. Doug, what practice area do you have? While I'm waiting for Doug to answer, Amber, do you conceptually understand what I'm talking about here?
Yes, I do. And one of the things that Melissa texted me was building a marketing funnel to deliver steady leads based on the marketing worksheet that we have, that you actually created, I assume, or your marketing people.
Yeah. You guys aren't members of How to Manage a Small Law Firm, are you?
No. Not yet. We need to sit down and we're going to discuss that at length as to becoming members with you, just because we like your no holds barred approach.
And the results that we get aren't bad either.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Doug, I mean, I know almost nothing about workers' comp. I'm sure that if I tried to have a conversation with Doug about workers' comp, I would be embarrassed because I wouldn't know anything. You know, being brilliant at the practice of law and being brilliant at the business of running a law firm are two completely different skill sets.
Absolutely.
I'm an attorney. I mean, I am a licensed attorney. And I am fully Amber. I guess we took Amber off, but thank you. Can I hear you? Can you hear me, Doug? Can I hear you? I see you, Doug. Lorena, is Amber off and is Doug on?
No, I think I'm still on. I was just listening.
Okay. I'm just going to transition the conversation over to Doug because I think this is really important. Doug, raise your hand, please.
Doug is unmuted. He can talk.
He's unmuted. Doug, can we talk?
Absolutely.
All right. I think this is really important. I could have been, and I sincerely believe this. I sincerely believe that had I set my mind to it, I could have been a phenomenal bankruptcy lawyer. There was a time I interned at the U.S. Trustee's office. I clerked for a federal bankruptcy judge. My family had been through three multi-million-dollar bankruptcies, business bankruptcy. I mean, I know bankruptcy, right? I also believe that had I set my mind to it, I think I could have been a phenomenal litigator. I just have that thing about me. I could have been a great litigator. I know that about myself. All right? I think I also could have been a really great estate planning attorney or a family law attorney. There's a lot of practice areas that I would suck at, but those areas I know I would be great at. But you know that song, the Love and Spoonfuls, you know the song I'm talking about?
Yeah, have you ever had to make up your mind?
Have you ever had to make up your mind, right? To pick up with one and leave the other behind, right? Well, what I decided was I was going to be the best in the world at the business of running a small law firm. And I am. And I can back that up with facts and data and case studies, and I would challenge anyone to put their record of success up against mine. I will crush them.
So you picked what you love.
But you know what? I could have loved being a great bankruptcy lawyer. I mean, I can geek out on the biblical origins of bankruptcy. I can go on. I can have a great conversation about that. But I had to pick up one and leave the other behind, right? So we have 400 lawyers, and I personally make more money than many of them. But when I'm talking with one of our members, I mean, I hire our members for different legal situations all the time. I'm involved in a litigation right now, being sued by an old fucking vendor. And I hired one of our lawyers. And my business is bigger than his business, and I make more money than he makes. But you know what? When it comes to litigation, he says, sit down, shut up, and let me tell you how this is going to work. And I do, because he's the expert. I work with one of our members for intellectual property matters. And when it comes to intellectual property, she says, sit down, shut up, and let me tell you how it works. And I do. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The point I'm making is don't be embarrassed because you made the decision to focus on being the best workers' comp lawyer you can be. How could you possibly be the world's best workers' comp lawyer, or be the best workers' comp lawyer in your market, or be the best workers' comp lawyer who you personally could possibly be, if you also were trying to be the best expert on how to build and run a successful law firm? How could you be the best at both of those?
Well, you can, I personally probably can't. And no, the truth is, you're just scratching the surface here.
Doug, this is the point I want you and everyone to understand. No one can, and only stupid, extremely immature, very naive people think that they can. Only a very immature, naive person thinks, I could be a race car driver, and I could be an astronaut, and I could be a ballerina, and I could be a fireman, and, I mean, these people, but you got to understand, Doug, and I'm being really serious. There are 100,000 lawyers right now today running their own struggling law firms who are acting like little children who think, I could be the best lawyer and run a great law firm. How could you do that? How could you be the best at knowing how to run a law firm, the business of a law firm, and be the best at your craft? I mean, isn't that?
I don't have it, Amy, to do that.
No one can do that.
Yeah.
So look, that's where how to manage small law. Let me put it another way. Look how sad this is. Look how sad and pathetic this is. Marketing. You see this?
Yes.
Marketing, sales, production, physical plant, financial controls. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Marketing, sales, production, people, physical plant, financial controls, and goals. These are the 7 main parts of a law firm, right?
Correct.
Marketing brings prospective new clients in. Sales converts them. I'm writing this out. Marketing. Sales. Production. People. Can you read that?
Yes.
Okay. Marketing leads to sales. Sales leads to the need for production. Production requires people to do things. People who do things need things. That's physical plant. That mm-hmm. includes policies, procedures, instructions, computers, desks, chairs, internet, things like that. You do this all right, and you got money you got to manage, and the whole thing is in service of your goals. Yes?
Perfect.
Okay. But here's how it really works in the real world. The real world, you got marketing. Can't do an upside down G, which leads to sales. Sales leads to production. Production leads to people. People leads to physical plant.
Yeah, there's an interrelationship among all of these things. I was getting that while you're talking to Amber.
And physical plant leads to financial controls. Financial controls get reinvested back into marketing. And the whole thing, and this is where the whole thing breaks down, because the whole thing is like spokes on a wheel revolving around you. Where you start telling yourself stories and get scared of marketing, the marketing will stop working. Where you start telling yourself stories and run away from sales, the sales will stop working. Where you start making things more complicated or you don't know how to streamline production, the production stops working, and so on and so forth. And we even saw earlier with Amber, who seems like a pretty sharp person, and she's on top of her numbers, and she's running a $700,000 law firm, and she's got reports, and she's got data. And she even had a little, you know, kind of like a little scare moment there when we said, you're going to double your revenues. And she said, yeah, but then she didn't make the double on the staff.
Right.
Right.
I was working through this too while you were talking to her, and I'd roughed out a business plan for the next year based on what you were walking her through. And that's when the light bulb went off. I was an accountant before. It never even occurred to me to break it down like this. It's not that hard when you break it down, but then we need somebody like you to teach us how to do those things. The math is one thing, you know, the facility and all that, but then be able to pull it all together.
Let me tell you, teaching you to do it is relatively simple.
Right.
The reason that our members have sustained profits and sustained growth and sustained sanity isn't just because we taught them how to do it. We actually are the CEO of their law firm for them. We are the professional legal administrator of their law firm for them. Week in and week out, we show up and we make sure this is all working, just like a professional legal administrator does for a big law firm.
That is a remarkable concept.
That's our business. And when you get your law firm up to, if, and not everyone wants to, you get your business up to around $1.5 million, and then you outgrow our virtual timeshare COO service, and you bring in a professional legal administrator, and we'll help you train the person, and we will celebrate as we offload and celebrate your departure from the nest. And then we keep working as your CEO and your CEO, your CFO. And then we get you up to around $3 million if you want to, and not everyone does, and not everyone has to, and that's fine. We are not about pressuring anyone to outgrow us. If you don't want to, that's great. We got people who've been with us for 10 years. You don't have to outgrow us. But if you want to, then you get the firm up to around $3 million and you bring in a professional management accountant.
You made an outstanding point. Well, a number of them, but early on here when you were coaching Amber, you made the point that, look, you know, you don't have to grow past this point if you don't want to, but pick a point that you actually do want to achieve. Otherwise, you will not do what it takes. That was perfect. And that started me making a business plan where you were talking to Amber, and I know how the numbers all interrelate, and I get it, and I got to what I needed to do and how many more cases, and I thought, well, I got to double my budget then for advertising. And that means I got to redo the numbers, because if I'm going to double the budget for advertising, I need to make more cases, more settlements, get more clients in the door. So there's an equilibrium there. But it never occurred to me until I heard you today to think about it this way. Like, duh, as my daughter would say.
Yeah, but you know, I probably would be duh if I was trying to handle a workers' comp case.
I mean, I've been doing that
for 20 years. Day in, when I was in law school, we had a professor. And his professor, I don't know who, Nancy, press star 6 to raise your hand. Or star 9. We had a professor in law school. He taught Civ Pro, okay? And his name was Professor Rohr. And everyone called him D plus Rohr because everyone got a D plus, myself included. We all got D pluses. Everyone got a D plus, right? He was brutal. It was Civ Pro. And he went to Harvard. And everyone was all intimidated and said, oh, he's a genius and will never understand civil procedure as well as he does because he's such a genius and he went to Harvard. And he might be a genius, I don't know. But let me tell you this. My whole Civ Pro book wasn't a whole lot bigger than this. Was yours? I mean, the whole Civ Pro book in law school is maybe this thick.
Yeah, ours was bigger. But I never understood the professor, though.
Sorry?
Yeah, ours was bigger, but I didn't understand my professor when it was the only class I got a C in first.
But here's the point that I'm trying to make. Everyone acted like this guy was a genius, and he might have been a genius. I don't know. But the fact that he's been teaching the same class 3 times a semester, every semester of the year, for the last 10 years, out of a book not much bigger than this, and that he has the thing memorized inside and out, backwards and forward, that is not evidence of being a genius. That's evidence of not being a moron. You follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So the
He's
point
very I'm good at one thing.
The fact that I know this stuff inside and out doesn't mean I'm like a genius. It just means I've been doing it. There's just not that much involved in building $1 million and sustaining $1 million solo or small law firm. It's not that complicated. You do it for 20 years, and I promise you, you're going to look like a genius too. It's just not that much to it.
Until I heard you this week, and I've been paying attention all week, it just really hadn't occurred to me how simple this can be when you do it the right way. And of course, you guys have the expertise that goes behind how to make all these numbers work. So it's not really this simple, but in concept, it is this simple. What do you want to get? What do you have to do to get there? I made a list of about 10 or 12 different variables while you were talking to Amber that are relevant to her, relevant to me, cost per client, cost per click. How many calls does it take to get a client? What's the average value of a case? How many do I have to settle in a year to get the incremental revenue I want? You know, I'm thinking, geez, why didn't I think of this before? It's not that friggin' hard, you know?
It's not. No, there's things you can do to tweak your marketing to make your marketing work a little bit better. Or think about it like this. If you can get your marketing to work 10% better and you can increase your conversions by 10% and you can make your operations streamlined to work just 10% better. And we're just talking about small 10% changes.
Right.
Increase your marketing by 10%. You go from 10 new cases, 10 new prospects per month to 11 new prospects per month. You increase your conversion rate by 10%. You go from 30% conversion rate to 33% conversion rate, right? Well, 30%, so 10 times 0.30 is 3, but 11 times, but 0.33 on 11 is 4. That's one extra client per month.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say you streamline your operations, just 10%, just 10% more efficient operations. Right? And are you seeing where I'm going with this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Little hinges swing big doors in law firm management. Everyone's out there looking for like this grand gesture. What's the big thing? There is no big thing. Big things are for fantasies. That's little kids look for the big happily ever after magic pill solution. Lawyers waste 10, 20, 30 years of their lives looking for the big thing when the obvious stuff is right in front of their face.
You know, the other day when you mentioned a business plan, I wasn't even really sure what you meant. And then just in your conversation with Amber, I just put one together. Like, and that's why I'm embarrassed. I mean, this is so obvious that I can't believe I didn't know what you meant 4 days ago when you were talking about mentality.
I have a virtual happy hour with our members starting in 4 minutes. So look, what? I should invite them to join the happy hour? Where, how? Do you guys want to join us for the virtual happy hour with our members? Well, we could just give them the Zoom.
Yeah.
So why don't you put the Zoom invite in here? So Stephanie just suggested that we invite all you guys to the virtual happy hour with our members. The joke's on you. They're Allie's almonds, and they've been there for a month. So Stephanie's going to post the virtual happy hour in there. The virtual happy hour is starting in 3 minutes with our members. So what I'm going to do is
I'm just going to share another meeting ID with everybody.
Okay, and while you're doing that, post it there. I'm going to unmute Nancy. Oh. I'm going to unmute Nancy. Nancy, you're unmuted.
Hey, Arjan.
Hi.
How are you? No, good. I'm good. Listen, I was sort of like keying into that whole piece about doubling the revenue. And, you know, I was making that comment about having my coach. I'm a member. I started January of this year. I was at the LQM that was in Phoenix. And I've had my best month this at closing March. So it's been a wonderful process for me in the short time that I've been exposed to the program. So, and I said, I have a meeting with my coach Monday morning. I'm going to be with Terry Fogarty Monday morning, focusing on the sales and the marketing and the, I've got to look at the staffing piece. I need to hire somebody. So,
and fortunately for you, it's going to be a really great hiring environment pretty soon. All these people are firing all their greatest people.
Wonderful. Listen, I come from hospitality. I know you keep talking about what we put on the menu and what's going into the sandwich. So I'm looking at some of those hospitality people, and they're going to potentially do some sales and marketing for me. So I'm thankful. I'm just grateful to be involved with the program thus far. And like I said, it's one of those bills I'm happy to pay. So
I really appreciate you saying that.
I appreciate that.
So listen, everyone, in the discussion thing, Lorena just posted the virtual happy hour that we're about to have with our members starting in 2 minutes. I'm going to get out of this and I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to go to that. So go to the virtual happy hour, or go to howtomanageasmalllawfirm.com/appointment and schedule an appointment to talk to someone from my team, or do whatever you're going to do. But I got to go to the bathroom. So I'm hanging up, and I'm leaving meeting. I'll be over in the virtual happy hour. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Arjun.
Bye, everyone.